Now it's time for questions.
Well, thank you very much for your presentation. It was, in fact, surprising. And I would like you to expand, if it's possible, on the policies that you refer. Because what we've seen is really not a decision to give into what we call here austerity or reduction of the spending or major spending from the government, but rather redistribution and the fact that the 1% that are more favored were more imposed to give on their income tax rather than, you know, being spared as the tendency was before. So I'd like you to expand on the general policies of the government and how that was accepted, and if you refer that those policies were in fact the backbone for protecting the health of the children in that crisis period.
If I shall make a very short comment on that, was shortly, the government that took power in May 2009 was voted out of power 2013, so people were not so happy to tell the truth. So, and now we have a government that is also highly disputed on what that government. They are called, the former government was called, they called themselves that we are the welfare government. And people voted them out because of a lot of complicated issues. One of the issues and the policy that they were mostly criticized for was how were they going to attend to the extremely high household debts of families. And it's complicated in a short time, but remember the Icelandic króna just fell down like a stone. And some people have their income in Icelandic króna, but are taking loans in euro, for example, which means the burden doubled. So that was one issue, it's complicated, and they did not address that properly, so many people felt betrayed. And I think what I've been describing to you, I think many people did not really see it as a success. Do you understand? It was just as usual. They took it for granted. Things that are not granted, if you don't want to keep on it. The government put also, which I think fits into this discussion, and also what you are asking about, they put on a welfare watch, an interdisciplinary large body of consultative body for the government, that the government that should advise the government. And they were focusing very much on the elderly. They were still focusing on the social security people, on those unemployed. They approached unemployment, for example, by opening doors to university or schools, etc. Directorate of Health, where I was, we got students to our professional staff to help us for 3 months or 4 months or 2 months, you understand? And they had some salary. So everything was done to avoid unemployment, put people back to work. I think that was a great success in many aspects. So I think people can debate the current government, what they are doing. But one of the first issues they did, they will lower the taxes on the fishing industry. That was the first. The second, they took lowered the taxes for the most wealthy. Just two examples. So we can debate, it's a long debate.
J'ai oublié de vous demander de vous nommer, parce qu'on enregistre les débats ici au montage, on vous demande la permission. Apparaître dans le show.
Alors, je m'appelle Terry Kaufman. I'll ask the question in English, puis si vous voulez, je vais le traduire par la suite. The piece that I didn't hear was, from what I remember, Iceland was different than any other country in dealing with the economic crisis and dealing with the banks. So So first the government said we're going to repay the banks. The population, if I remember, threw out the government, said we're not, there was a referendum, we're not going to throw out, we're not going to pay. That was the only country in the world, in the developed world, that took that decision. So when I look at your minimal depreciation of health of kids and the rest of the population, especially compared with Greece and others, I guess my question is one of that importance of what I would call the democratic quotient or empowerment of the population, their self-worth, both before the ability to take a democratic decision and to come to a conclusion that we don't agree with the government. That takes strength. It takes a population that understands what democracy is. And it takes a large middle class population to be able to do that. So when I hear all of the numbers that you're describing, it seems to me the most interesting thing is not so much, the success that you've had, but also because you did that, compared to all the other countries, the developed countries, you've had a great success relative to the negative impact on kids relative to other countries, whether it's Greece or some other European countries or North American countries. And so I'd just like you to, whether it's now or later, is just explain if there have been any studies on health explaining that because of that different economic orientation, whether there's been any studies showing how it impacted on the relative health between various countries.
I think every country is contextual in this way. So I have no, there are some countries, European countries, de facto, that have not shown any impact on the crisis. But Iceland was in its severity very special. I think you mentioned the banks. It's a long answer to really explain what happened. It is true, the former government was pursuing policies regarding the banks that was voted down by the population. It is actually, we could say, to the credit to the government, they listened to the population and changed policy. That the former government did that. The issue at stake was not paying, which was mistakenly understood like that, usually, that Iceland was not paying. We are still paying this debt. But it's not on the responsibility of the state. Yes. So the banks need to find it. But they are still fighting to survive the what we call the shadow of the loans that I was explaining to you that are still hovering in the system. That money that needs to go out because of those are foreigners. They want it in foreign currency. We don't have it. And they don't get it out. For me to get to Canada, I need to go to the bank and show that I have a plane ticket to get out of the country to get some foreign currency. It's not a free market. It's restricted. So it's a complicated situation and how the democratic society, it was proliferating in Iceland during this time. Lot of hotly debated, but we are, like I say, we are a population that is quarreling all the time.
I'm Michel Camus from Health Canada, epidemiologist. Do you have an idea of how the spending in social services, health services, evolved over that period? Because with the government elected in 2009, I was wondering, maybe they made an effort not to cut that proportion of spending, which would therefore have meant that the services to the population would not have dropped either. They would have been maintained. And the second question I had is, in such a small population, maybe that's why the population was able to make sort of an uprise against the government, because communications in a small population are probably much easier than in a larger population. And has there been any indices of growing solidarity, associations, help groups, things like that, since the crisis? And I was relating that to the fact that there was more and more parents attending, caring for their teenagers, or you know. So maybe I thought, well, maybe a reaction would have been that people become a little bit more solidary, and families also, and people start caring a little bit more for them. So these are the two questions.
First, Iceland was spending around 9.25% of the gross domestic product to health in before the crisis. But then you have to remember the domestic product was very high because of the boom. So it was a lot of money. It lowered to 8.81% in the years following the crisis. So, and people are discussing, even people within the former government know that they cut possibly too deep, because this was compounded by the low GDP. So this was health. At the same time, user charges were increased a little bit from 17.5 or something like that to 18.5 to 19% of the total cost of healthcare services. So yes, there were cuts in the budget and there were increased user charges, not to children. That is, so I think that's the answer to your first question. The second question regarding the solidarity, I think it's difficult. I think people, first of all, less work, more time at home, and people were very much attending the welfare of children. I think so. I have people very much aware of the importance of the early years. And I think one reason also for the outcome is exceptional sacrifice by health professionals and educationalists, school setting. Everyone was sacrificed. Everyone felt this on their own skin. There are few families I know that do not know someone rather close to them who lost their work, had to change work. So this was really something. Those were dark days. I really tried to illuminate it, the darkness with the volcanoes. But this was very tough. And something that we are extremely proud of, volcanoes, we just want to run to see them. We love volcanoes, I really tell you. But these volcanoes too, we did not love them. Because this was really bad. We had now recently a huge explosion in the northern part of Iceland, but that was in the wilderness. And we love that too. But this was bad. It felt and was very illustrated for the mood of the country. So I think there were a lot of initiatives, yes, small groups, parents, everything. I think it has been gradually improving. One of the reasons because of for the lower tobacco, alcohol, etc., is more parental monitoring. One other issue. I think so.
I would take my turn for one question. What happened to the public health resources after the crisis?
It's a good... There are so many stories to tell you. My friends explained, I was a director of health service in general for Iceland, and we, during my period, we merged public health together with the directorate of health, the former. Directorate, it's a long story, but formerly it was also public health. But then they made a special unit, and then we merged again. Merger. Disintegration merges again. But anyway, What happened is public health budget. It is determined by taxes on alcohol and tobacco. So the government, within the law of director debt, we have responsibility for what is called the public health fund. And this public health fund takes 1% of all alcohol taxes goes to directly to that fund. And 0.9% of tobacco. This means that when the government, former government, raised the price of alcohol, we got more money. They could have cut it down. They could have said, you only get 0.5. They did not. They could have said, do you understand? But they didn't, so they kept it. So that money came in. 35% of that money came, for example, for activities that you were asking about. Initiative in a school setting, in a small compulsory school, or for wider community engagement of all type of all different types of activities. But 65 went to the directory for public health. So you see, so we could say that was, I would say this was a wise decision not to cut it, at least. It was enough. We had enough difficulties, and it would have been not so good to address all the work we had to do without this money. So we kept that, which I think was a political decision.
So
it's
just
still
the
Thank you. Louis Robert Frigault, I'm in the surveillance department. At the beginning of your talk, you said that you were grateful that you had surveillance data in order to make those statements that you made. And the context, and it's a bit of a linked question to the one that Marie-France just asked. How did you justify and maintain your surveillance activities in this period of economic crisis, whereas you say you've got, even within public health, you've got services, you've got programs that you do that are more direct interventions towards the population. How did you argue for keeping it?
Thank you for this question, because I think this type of data is very important to keep on. You need to. And you could maybe say I would want to see more social stratification. I would like to present that to you, but it takes a lot of work and is not really available properly. I really present this as an overall and no impact on general level, and it is possible that there are some different fluctuations in some groups. But even among the group of adolescents, we don't see that among the well-being. So coming back to your question is, I think one of the issues is we have electronic health records. And those are for the whole country. And even during the crisis, after 2012, we got more money into that. So we have a network that links up all the different regions of the country. So if you go visiting a doctor in the eastern part of the country, you can see that visit in Reykjavik if you want to the same day. So that is at least one issue, and people have been trying. We would have wanted to take it further, but we are improving, and we have electronic health records for children that are specially designed for the preventive services. So, and they have been improved 2009, 2010. So, I don't know how I argued for it. I think it's a question how we at the directorate worked and argued about it, but also we got earmarked money to improve the electronic services. So I would definitely recommend all of you to support that type of collection of data. an interlinkage of data banks or sources. That is with social, that is what I would really like to see, more social indicators. And we are trying to work on that.
I would like to ask the last one then. Can you summarize what were the protective factors for child health during this time of economic crisis in your country?
In short, I think that the Icelandic population at large, and health professionals particularly also, we appreciate, I think we all concentrated to try to protect children. I think so. There were even discussions about that we should not discuss the crisis with children close to the table, discussion table, because they should not need to worry unnecessarily. These are discussions going on. But I think one of the issues is that I think I would like to give credit to Iceland in that way. We were very keen to protect the children. I think that there was a general consensus about it. We may disagree on ways. We may disagree on how to do it. But if I look at the healthcare services, if I look at the school educational services, education, and I look at the welfare watch, the interdisciplinary body that was monitoring this, not only for children, but they focused on children, they focused on the unemployed, they focused on the social security, they focused on the elderly and the mentally disabled. So I think that was a general consensus. We need to stick together and protect those most vulnerable. I think that was at least one of the reasons, one of the protective factors. Let us see what the future will give us. But I hope for the better.
So thank you very much, Dr. Gunnlaugsson, and we'll take lessons from your country in putting policies that will protect our children and our most vulnerable people. Thank you again.